Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth center podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
I'm Erica Thomas.
I'm Ayana Ross.
I'm Lucy Anderson.
And today we're joined with Adam Cerisi. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I am a New York born artist, a multidisciplinary artist, and I've lived in Portland for between 14 and 15 years, somewhere around there. I'm a muralist, so that's been something that's a bigger focus of mine. I am a painter, studio artist, painter. I teach as well. That's more of like my job, I guess you would say. I also, you know, I'm a musician, and I dabble with like photography and reading and writing, and I kind of love skateboarding more than anything else, and I do that as much as possible, and I spend a lot of time with my dog and two cats.
Well, I wanted to kind of kick off asking about your mural work, because I feel like we don't have a lot of people who've done big pieces like that. So can you tell us a little bit more about like the process of how that gets started, or just like, how do you even begin to make a mural?
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting question, because on one hand, it can be a pretty long process. On the other hand, it could be something that goes up within a matter of hours. And it kind of really depends. I think there's two approaches to it in my mind. And one is just kind of the opportunity to get a big wall and make art on it. I mean, it can be as simple as that, spray paint or household paint, and just get the okay to paint a wall, or not the okay. I'm not gonna say whether I endorse that or not. But then there's a whole other side of things, which this is the realm that I found myself in the last I'd say decade, which is you're making art in the public sphere, and I think that with that comes a major responsibility of being inclusive, for instance, and you want to make sure that, for me personally, the work that you're making is representative of certain communities, especially like maybe the neighborhoods that they're going in. And so a lot of times the murals I do, there's, before I even start working on stuff, there can be some community outreach that happens. Sometimes it'll be a business that'll say, you know, one of the first experiences of a mural I did in Portland, and I think it shares some of this, it encapsulates this whole experience. Where I live here in Portland, in Northeast Portland, there was a market up until recently. A new market went in its place, but it was called Cokehen Market. And I used to go there like every other day. At the time, I was at Portland State University studying undergrad for art. And I would always come off the bus right there at the bus stop, and I'd, you know, walk and get a beverage or whatever. And I always have art with me. And the owner, Emmanuel, would always say like, oh, when you're going to make me some art? And he's like, I want you to make art on the side of my building. And I thought he was kind of always messing around. And eventually he told me, I am serious, you know, when are you going to make me some art on the side of my building? And so you know, eventually realized he was serious, and we discussed what he would like. And he said, you know, I know that, so this is at the corner of MLK and Deakum. The mural's long gone now. It's become a bar, and they turned the wall into like outdoor seating and painted it black. I feel like I just quoted an old song. But anyway, he said, I know there's some history behind Deakum. Maybe you could incorporate that into the mural. And I think that was kind of like the beginning of thinking, well, it's probably important to include local histories into a mural. And so I found out that Deakum was named after this guy, Frank Deakum, who was from Germany, moved here. He had a lot of money. I suppose you would say he's kind of a capitalist, and he put a lot of money into banks, I believe, here, but also he had put a lot of money into like school systems and stuff. Now, I don't know exactly how that money was getting allocated, whether it was like a really good thing or what have you, but there was eventually this economic scare that had happened, and he lost a lot of money. And then I read this little tidbit that he had been so homesick and so depressed by the loss of his finances that he missed the songbirds from Germany. And so he imported all these songbirds here. And supposedly, I think some of those songbirds that are here, some of the songbirds that were brought here, like, still kind of exist. I think, you know, reproduced since then. I guess I also heard that a bunch did, or read that a bunch didn't survive. But anyhow, this was all kind of fascinating to me. This German capitalist who moved here and tried to invest in Portland and did some good and also lost a lot. And he turned to nature to kind of bring him that sense of feeling at home. And so I made a mural that was just this caricature kind of depiction of him. And he was cut up into pieces, and it looked like he had been sewn back together. And it looked like it was the birds that were sewing him back together. Now, for like the anti-capitalist out there, it could look like the songbirds were tearing him apart. So I tried to keep it open-ended, that it's like, well, I'm making sure that all the anti-capitalists out here could be like, oh, okay, well, this is an interesting way to share the narrative. Or for those that really appreciated Frank Decom, and I'm sure there's are things to appreciate from him, you know, it could share more of this story that, like, he was, things were falling apart due to like an economic depression, and you know, he was turning nature to like kind of help put him back together. But I thought it was a really interesting story. So anyway, after, that was like one of the first murals I had done, and it was just through, you know, being social with people out in my community. And you know, the thing that's interesting is once one mural goes up, I mean, not like I want to perpetuate capitalism, but like it becomes an inadvertent advertisement, you know, you kind of, you know, my name was on there. I think maybe I put my email address on there below my name. And the next thing I knew, I got a few emails from people saying like, hey, I really love that mural. Like, you want to get us one over here? And then it just kind of kept going from there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really cool. Oh,
yeah.
I'm curious because you mentioned like using like spray paint and like other other items to make these murals. Like, what are some of the things that you use to make murals, and like what does it take, like, in terms of supplies and stuff to create that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so spray paint is a big medium of choice for me. I mean, so, you know, I grew up in New York in the 80s and 90s, and having grown up outside of the city, I visited frequently. And then once I graduated high school, I went there. But I was always spent a lot of time in New York City, and there's just graffiti everywhere, you know, and it was just, to me, the coolest thing. I just thought it was awesome. And so spray paint has always been, since I'm a kid, something that I was very interested in. And the beauty of spray paint is that it's really easy to wear. I mean, it's just one can, and it's amazing. I think one can, you can, you know, cover like over 40 square feet in a matter of minutes if you want. And so that's a pretty easy medium to work with. But it also can take some technique and skill, which just comes with experience and trial and error and stuff. But then there's just, you know, good old household paint, like, you know, house paint that you can get. You know, there's so many different paint stores around town. And rollers become really great, you know, like a large paintbrush, you know, or large paintbrushes. And so I typically use a combination of those things. But I mean, you also, sometimes you may need to use like a projector, for instance. I don't use them often, but sometimes you might need that to get your composition up on the wall before you start painting. And you can, you know, sketch it out with chalk, or just spray paint is always my favorite tool to just sketch because you can move really quick. Sometimes you can use a grid. There's a couple different methods for a grid. But I mean, as far as like the actual materials go, it's house paint, acrylic paint, like acrylic latex paint, spray paint. But I'm a huge enthusiast of coming up with other things. You know, there's murals that are done with like living gardens, for instance. You know, it'd be like a wall with moss, for instance. We have one of those in Portland here. I remember being really inspired seeing years ago someone who was going throughout, gosh, I think it was in LA, and they were going through like tunnels, you know, the vehicles would pass through and the walls were just caked in, you know, soot from all the exhaust. And they went in with a power washer and they just power washed, removed all the filth, and it looked like artwork, but it was just, you know, they just took the soot off and you kind of saw the light gray of the wall and had that as a viable mural. So, I mean, sky's the limit, but personally for me, I tend to stick with spray paint and house paint and sometimes a little bit fancier acrylic, like artist, I guess, artist quotations grade paint.
I wanted to give the students a chance to ask questions if they'd like to.
Yeah. Lucy, you had some good questions. Ayana, too, prepared if you... Do either of you want to jump in?
I guess, how did you begin to find your style? And, like, does it, like, stay the same across all your different mediums? Or is there a particular style that you stick to?
Yeah, that's a... It's a tough question. So I suffer from like ADD. I have my whole life. And sometimes like art is great as an outlet, but sometimes like when I use it as a means to express myself or represent myself, I'll say, oh, this feels really good. This feels really natural. And I'll be working with some kind of style. And then I all of a sudden find myself doing something else. I don't know when I departed from that one style to another one because ADD. but there are several styles that I've kind of have been coming back to for a long time. And one, I think when it comes to murals, has been a little bit inspired by graffiti actually. And it's just the simple, for instance, like when you spray, let's say I was spray painting, you know, like a letter, for instance, you can use a fill color, you know, like fill in the color with, let's say I was doing an A, and then you would outline it. And it's a pretty simple process, you know, I mean, it's very similar to screen printing too. You'll like lay down what they'll call like a flat, and then you'll have like the details and outlines. So I've kind of used that formula for a long time. But at the same time, you know, I've been painting my entire life. I mean, I can remember like very early memories of playing with paint. You know, I'm very fortunate to have had a few people in my family, especially my dad's side of the family, who are artists and who gave me paint and stuff to work with. And so for a long time I thought, you know, oh, I want to learn how to paint realistically, you know? And so I got really good at understanding the human form and, you know, value and all that stuff. And I was able to, you know, paint realistically. And so I do that sometimes, but I don't really find like my style in there. I just feel like I'm trying to represent something realistically, but it's not stylistically what I'm looking for. So, I mean, I know this is like a very long response to your question, but I think it like really kind of becomes like, it's dependent on what I'm working on. Like I've made bodies of work, which are like totally abstract. And I was working with like fire. Like I would just take a flame and put it up to a canvas and let the soot of the fire collect on like a white, gessoed piece of wood, and I would just kind of like let that interaction of smoke collect on the like as the fire hit the canvas, and it would just make these really beautiful forms. And I went hard with that for a couple of years, and I made like hundreds of paintings of that, but I haven't done one in years. And sometimes I like to really work with certain types of like iconography and work with making people, but not realistic, you know, having like a little bit of my own style with it. So it has, you know, like I said, it was kind of inspired by some of the work that I enjoy doing with spray paint. And then kind of like using certain signifiers within it to like create some sort of narrative. That I think that's something I come back to a lot. And I also like really enjoy like botanicals and plants and vessels that can be, that those things can be carried in. And so I mess around with those a lot too. And I would also say in recent years, you know, I've been teaching Pacific Northwest College of Art for a few years and recently at Portland Public Schools, but at PNCA, I've been teaching a class for a couple years now that's all in color theory. And which I really enjoy. And now I've been finding myself including that in my work a lot more. And so I feel like my work got a lot brighter and a lot more colorful. So I don't know if that would be like a stylistic choice. Possibly, I guess. So that's something I've been finding. But honestly, I'm really not the kind of artist that's good with like having a definitive style and going with it. I get bored pretty easily. And I think it's not just that I get bored. It's that I feel like I find myself like having these different personalities that want to get expressed almost, you know? So then I then find an outlet with like, this style feels good for this personality that I can't shake right now kind of thing.
Ayana and I were looking at your work together. And I also want to mention that the reason that you're on the show is because Ayana took a class from you. So this is also a moment, Ayana, if you feel like you want to share a little bit about that experience as a student. What did you do in that class, and what was the class about?
Well, like, each week, there'd be a host artist, or not a host.
A guest artist, a different, yeah.
Guest artist. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, for me, it was really helpful to see all the different, like, styles and, like, I guess, as someone, you know, trying to find their own, and the conversations that we would have about the art, and like some of them were political, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or like they were, you know, being activists through their artwork, which was really cool. And a combination of that and also the one time you sort of like assigned the project, that's kind of what helped me make my stickers and like start that process of, I guess, trying to be an activist through my artwork, if that makes sense. Yeah,
cool. Yeah,
do you want to say what those stickers are? I know you've mentioned it on the show before, but just in case people didn't hear that episode.
I saw the movie The United States versus Billie Holiday, and I didn't even know. It was a really good movie. I don't want to say too much about it, but through that, I ended up learning about her song, Strange Fruit, and the United States did not, or I guess the government, didn't want her singing that song because it was about lynching. And so I've made these stickers, these, like, Strange Fruit as a reference to her song.
And then the assignment, you were saying the assignment was to put them to make an artwork and put it in the public?
Yeah, to get your art in the streets.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
There's definitely, like, a really good street art tradition with stickers.
So, yeah. So that class came out of a program that I've been working on for actually a couple of years now, like in quietly been trying to put together this thing, which I've called street ed as opposed to like academic education. Growing up, I did not have the greatest high school experience to the point where I actually was completely kicked out. I ended up having to go to an alternative school. I almost didn't even graduate on time. And that kind of pushed me into the world of education. I kind of always felt back then, I want to be a teacher. I don't know when, but like someday I want to maybe try to provide an experience that like I didn't get at my school. back in New York. And over the years, you know, being going to PSU and PNCA, great schools, but there's always tons of institutional issues. When I was at PSU, there was like a, I remember they were like so excited about a new football field coming in. And then I found out like a massive budget cut to the arts. And it like hurt, you know, you're like, I like took it personally. I was like, what, how, what football? And it's not, I'm not going to go into there, but so like over the years, I started getting more and more disenchanted with education, same way I was younger. And I got to a certain point where, I remember, okay, so there's a band I absolutely love called Fugazi. I've loved them since I'm young. Very young. I feel like actually more of my teachers when I was a kid came from punk rock, like Fugazi or Bad Religion and stuff, than I came from my teachers, to be honest. And there's a lyric that always stuck with me in this one song of Fugazi's last album, which says, academic or street education. And it just stuck with me. And I was like, you know, there's so much that we can learn from the streets, you know? And there's many different ways for us to think of the streets. But the way that I think about it is, it's the public sphere. It's not coddled behind institutionalized walls, you know? It's everyone's part of it. Even if you're in an institution, when you're walking down a street, you are no longer in an institution. You are in the streets. You are in the public. And I think there's so much to learn from the streets, not just like walking down the streets and what do the walls have to say. I mean, there's so many opportunities for communities to come together in the public sphere to intersect and to bring new things to us. And so I thought about creating this program called Street Ed, which like can utilize art to help further education, especially for like people like myself who just wasn't vibing with the contemporary rubric of high school educational systems. And you know, so I thought it would be cool for us to like discuss as a class, like what are the lines of legality for making art in the street. So for instance, there's like tons of public utility, all of our tax dollars go to that, right? So like a telephone pole, for instance, and we see this all the time, a lost cat will be, you know, we'll put up an ad on the telephone pole and no one goes up in arms about it. You know, the pole of a stop sign can get stickers on it. No one really goes up in arms about it. And I think if we slow down and take some time, like we can start to really see, I mean, especially the last year with a lot of the sort of social unrest happening in the city, I feel like we started really learning a lot of what was happening in the city. It was really fascinating because we were all like kind of stuck indoors. Meanwhile, if you go out for a walk, there was like so much we could learn about like what's happening in the city right now, you know, politically, socioeconomically, culturally. And so seeing all that kind of like gave me the momentum to be interested in saying this thing that I've been working on, this idea of creating a street ed program, I'm just going to go for it. And I started speaking with the Portland Street Art Alliance. And then not too much later, they let me know that Portland Public Schools reached out to them and said, you know, we're looking if y'all would be interested in teaching a class. And they're like, well, we don't have any experience as a teacher, but we know Adam who does, which I've been teaching mural painting at PNCA for a few years. I had a class there that I still have a class there called Murals for the People. And it works with adults. And then over the summer, I work with youth over like a summer program. But so I got to bring it to PPS and put together this program with the school that, you know, we talk about like the history of murals. Like I talk about how, like where it's come from with like Mexican muralism, for instance. And we talk about how it overlaps with activism and how the streets kind of become the platform for us to really voice. I mean, we have the internet to do that as well, but like real action like happens in the streets too. It doesn't mean you have to go out and get arrested or something like that. It means that we can go out and get creative and how to inspire others, how to express ourselves. So that class was trying to figure out, you know, and it's interesting, Ayana and vast number of other students had reached out to me. Like, I'm trying to figure out stylistically, like, what is my voice as an artist? What do I want to do? And you know, I think when we make our work in a studio, we're safe, you know? There's no one looking over you. when you bring that art out into streets, all of a sudden everyone sees it. And I think you, I think there's a switch that can happen. All of a sudden you start to realize that, you know, the work, like, you can pay attention to it a little bit more. I don't know why this is. I feel like I just heard something in OPB this morning, someone talking about, like, the best way they hear their voice is with an audience. Like, they can practice singing all the time, but all of a sudden it really clicks when they're in front of an audience. And so a lot of artists can spend years and years trying to find an audience by getting into a gallery, or maybe a cafe will bring their artwork there. But honestly, you can go outside your door and go put some artwork up in the street, and all of a sudden you now have a massive audience, you know? And so kind of thinking about how accessible that is, and making that accessible, but also or hoping to make that accessibility clear to students, to artists, to younger artists. And then in doing that, to also think about, there's going to be social responsibilities that we should think about, we should consider, you know? And you know, part of that class is discussing that. Like, what are some of those responsibilities? What are the things that we want to share, you know? Like, I mean, Ayana stickers are amazing because there's, like, they're colorful. They take on, like, a very serious topic, as you had already mentioned. But then the actual imagery of it is, it's much more complex, because it's, like, this fruit that's kind of melting, you know, right? Is that like, a decent way to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and it says strange fruit. And so, like, obviously there's like the obvious, like, oh, okay, well, strange fruit, but it looks like it's melting. So does it have to do with, like, the Billie Holiday song, and then what the whole song was about? And I think it makes it much more interesting. And I think it brings in a level that of, like, lightheartedness to it, which then can open up such a serious topic. And that's the kind of stuff that can stick with people, you know, like, you can be walking and all of a sudden something can catch your eye, and it can stick with you. And I love that. That's what I love about street art. That's kind of was like the back, some of the backstory of the street ed program I've created. And, you know, we are continuing into the future with Portland Public Schools and outside of it as well. I still try to teach students everything from spray painting to just, like, what is some etiquette to consider with making work in the streets. I know some people will probably tell me I'm an old fool to talk about etiquette with making work in the street, you know, but like, for instance, in a week or two, a lot of the students that were in the class this last term, we are going to Ethos Music Center, and we're making a mural over there. There's about 10 of us or 11 of us, something around that. We're working with another local artist who I just, like, am in love with their work, Molly Mendoza. Her work is incredible. If y'all haven't seen it, I would encourage y'all to check out Molly Mendoza's work. And we're all going to collaborate together and make a beautiful mural for Ethos on the back of their wall. That's going to be, we can do everything we can to be inclusive. And, like, within that is going to be, you know, a series of community outreach sessions. I believe we're bringing in, like, Don't Shoot PDX, for instance, to share a little bit about the history of the Albina district, and how we can be inclusive in that manner, how we can include certain historical narratives. But at the same time, we want to envision futures for our youth, and imagine diverse futures. So we're trying to put all that together as a crew. So that's part of the street ed program. It's not just, like, being in a classroom and talking about this stuff. It's like, we're also going to go out to the streets and go hard in the paint, you know?
It's the best way to learn how to do anything.
Totally.
<Yeah. laughs> Lucy, I think you were waiting also to ask a question.
Oh, yeah. My question is, so, like, since you've made art a part of your career, do you still take time to, like, make art for yourself that's not necessarily going to be seen by anybody, but, like, you just want to make it for fun?
Yeah, it's such a struggle. This is, like, honestly something I talk to my partner about at the end of the day frequently, and I want to have more time to make my own art. I get some time to doodle in my sketchbook a lot, but it never so frequently those doodles just stay as little doodles with pencil or pen. And then some notes at the bottom, like, if I ever get to this, I want to do this kind of coloration with this kind of paint, you know? But it's a really interesting question because I spent years trying to work myself up as a muralist, as a public a street artist. And most of the time I'm making work with, you know, sometimes I'll have like I said before, like a market that will say, hey, could you make us a mural? And I say to them, like, what can I do for, what can I can include for y'all, right? And so it's never like just truly my work, as you're pointing out. And I think I'm finally getting to that point where I'm going back to the studio with some time to make work. But honestly, it's been really depressing not having as much time as I used to make my own work. Because now I'm just like brimming with ideas and I don't have a chance to get to it. I'm like, I have the time to make work. And then someone's like, hey, could you come over and do this? I'm like, please just give me some time. But I really like, I don't have the same amount of time I used to make that work. And I've been, it's because I had a little bit of time like that, like the kind of the whole shutdown that had happened last year was the first time I had years where I could just sit down and make work without thinking about like a client or a community or communities that I'm trying to include. And it felt really nice. It was like a very liberating moment. And it was fleeting because then all of a sudden work started happening again, classes and new murals and stuff. But I've been doing what I can to make it so that at the end of the summer, I can just like teach a couple days a week and then get in the studio and have no more commissions for a while and just maybe make some new bodies of work, play with color a lot. That's what I'm looking forward to. But the struggle, yeah, it went from like years of struggling to find a good job and having all the time to make art, but like depressed about not having a job, so I didn't make that much work, to all of a sudden getting a job, and now I'm depressed because I don't have time to make art, and all I want to do is do that for myself, you know? But I'm slowly finding a balance. My therapist is helping me find that balance.
Lucy, I think this actually, the other question that you mentioned being curious about when we were prepping for the show, I think this is also like a good lead in.
Oh, yeah. I was also wondering, like, did you always know that you wanted to incorporate art into your career, or did you have a different career path in mind? And like, if you did, what led you to become an artist?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's interesting, like, combining art and career together for me, because yes, like, my career, I would say at this point, is being an artist slash educator. And they obviously intersect for me, because I'm not like a teacher that teaches history. I'm a teacher that teaches different forms of art. But being an artist was just kind of like how I navigated the world. From such a young age, it was always like there's art supplies around my house, and I would just play around with them. I think I actually just had another student from the class that you ran, Ayana, ask me this question. I just wrote this out, and what I shared with them was, so I graduated college, and then I spent years just not doing anything, just traveling around and work. I'm sorry, actually, I went to a trade school for recording music and, you know, production and engineering music. New York chewed me up, spit me out. I was like, by then, I'm not going to get chewed up and spit out anymore by you. You know, I'm over this. And then I came out to here, and then I was like, oh, there's no music industry. At least back then in 2007, I think it was, I moved here. Everyone that I got in touch with, I was like, hey, do you need an engineer? And they're like, oh, it's in like out of my basement, and it's just two of us. Like, we don't need, there was no like big studio that I could go work at as like an assistant engineer. So I was like, well, back to the drawing board. I went back to school, and I was like, you know what? I really want to get involved in like, maybe with like some kind of like human rights organizations and stuff. So I went back to school for political science, and eventually, when I got to PSU, I whittled it down to international development and even more specific focused in Latin America. So I started pursuing that path for about a year or so. And I remember one day I was in this Latin American economics class, which is something I wanted to know a lot about, you know, especially like post-colonial. Like I was really interested in understanding what, like, you know, the economic structure of different Latin American countries have been like. Especially, I remember like learning about in Argentina some you know, factory workers who occupied a factory and then like created relationships with, you know, some places throughout the rest of the country they could get raw materials, and told the U.S. corporations that aren't like, F you, you know, we're taking this thing over. And then they did amazing things. So I was really interested in that. But instead, I sat there for like an hour without realizing it, just like drawing in my book. Like I was trying to get into art shows out here. It's my second year of living here, I think it was. And so I was more busy with thinking about like art pieces I could have for this like group show that I was going to be in. And all of a sudden I was like, I didn't write a single note. And I just heard the teacher go like, okay, hopefully y'all took good notes on that. We're going to have a quiz next week. And I was like, no. And I looked down and I was like pretty stoked on the art that I was making in my book. And I was like, you know what? I just closed it up. Like literally walked out of class. Like maybe it was during a break. Maybe I just had the gall to like get up and leave while the teacher was talking. Walked to admissions. Was like, look, I have to switch to art. And somehow I was able to do that. I set myself back almost 2 years. So I ended up doing like 5 years at college. But that was a moment where I was like, you know what? Okay, like I'm not going to try to avoid this anymore. Like I'm going to take art really seriously. It's not just like up until that point, it was just like what I do, you know, like, you know, there's people I know who are like avid bird watchers. They're not like a career in bird watching. It's just what they love to do. And that's how I'd been with art up until that point. And then I realized, you know, maybe I can make it some sort of viable career path. And it was a struggle for years afterwards. Like I was still trying to get in gallery shows, and I would, you know, show at cafes and restaurants, and I would sell enough pieces to be able to like afford rent, kind of. And then like the mural that I mentioned earlier that I did for that market kind of all of a sudden made me be like, all right, this thing that I've really loved more than anything else, which is street art and mural painting, I'm going to just keep doing that. One thing that's cool about it is way bigger than the little paintings I was making for shows. So like group shows, so I could like get paid more money for them. And then all of a sudden I started getting comfortable, not comfortable financially, but I could at least afford rent for a couple of months. And that just made me realize like, okay, if I can just keep putting all of my energy and time into making art, especially thinking about it in the streets, because at the time when I first started doing murals in the city, there wasn't that many. Actually, Portland for a long time made it really difficult to make murals. Like the process to get a permit could take like a year. You had to pay a lot of money to be able to get that permission on the wall. It's only in the last like half decade or so that they lightened up a lot of those laws. And which is why it's only the last few years that I feel like we've been seeing this like quote golden age of street art and mural painting specifically. But at that moment, I was like, I want to be part of this effort to bring more color and art to the streets, because the people deserve it. You know, not everyone is going to be able to take the time or has even the access to be able to go to galleries and see artwork. I want people to be able to go walk out into the world, you know, walk their dog, go walk with a friend, you know, on even headed to work or to the grocery store and be able to see art on that. So that was kind of like the impetus for me to like follow that, which became much more of a career path than being like a studio artist.
I kind of wanted to ask a little bit about your music and sort of the different bands that you've played and been in. If you could just kind of tell us about that and yeah.
Yeah. Well, the same thing is like with my visual art. I can't escape the ADD that I have. So I have one band called Carrion Spring. A lot of people think I'm saying Carry On Spring, but it's Carrion as in like a dead creature. And it's I'd say it's an emotional hardcore band. It falls into that category. That band I started out here, I think it's been about 12 years now. I think we've been around somewhere around that. And actually that term Carrion Spring or whatever, those two words came from a writer whose name is Cioran, I think is how I would say it, like Cioran. And he had this idea of Carrion Spring, which is like during the winter months, it snows and a lot of animals go into hibernation. And sadly enough, not all of them make it. And in the spring, the snow melts and there's some carrion just kind of laying about the floor of nature. But the thing is that they go and nurture new growth, right? Like they kind of enter back into the soil, new plants, new animals, that kind of thing. And Sioran had likened that to stages of development in our lives. Like sometimes we go into periods of hibernation and we can shed self, but we can shed certain aspects of ourself that can then nurture and make room for future selves and future growth. So it has like a really positive, a positive connotation. And that's a band that I've really poured a lot of myself into. But then I have another band I poured a lot of myself into called Said Goner, like S-A-I-D-G-O-N-E-R. The goner is that you're talking about might be that Said Goner or a quote Said Goner. That's been like a very personal project that is always really uneasy for me because I'm like, oh, I want to do music that sounds like this. And then I do it for a while and I release it and I've had the fortunate aspect of some record labels to release it. And it's so unnerving because I have no other band members to let me know, oh, this is good or bad, you know? And so it's like really taking a chance and putting something out into the world that I'm unsure of. And I've played in a lot of other bands. Like currently I play with this band called Ice Queens. That's really cool. They're kind of like a similar to like early Weezer, like 90s styled music. They're really, really impressive musicians. So I just play bass with them. And I have a bunch of other projects. I played drums for my first couple of years in Portland with a band called Logs that was actually kind of like Fugazi inspired. And I play a lot of other instruments too. Drums was the first instrument I learned from my father. He was a jazz drummer and he taught me quite a bit when I was younger. I love guitar and bass. I try to sing. I kind of play piano a bit, been learning over the years. And then because I have a background in music engineering and production, I have quite a bit of recording equipment, which has allowed me to learn a lot of instruments. And so I'll like write a song on guitar, but then all of a sudden I could play drums and bass and add keys. And so it's allowed me to like continue to develop as a musician and learn that way. And then I have another really cool project that is with, it's called Derasine, and it's with members from all over the country. And this has actually started before the pandemic. I feel like that's become a popular thing since like lockdown happened and all of a sudden musicians like, I'm bored, who wants to do a project? And now we have like the accessibility of all this equipment, but we were straight up doing this like a couple years prior to that. And I get to just do vocals and write lyrics that I feel are pretty poetic. But again, it's really like abrasive, kind of hardcore. And currently I'm working on a new album with my band Carrion Spring and Said Goner album. And that, especially a Said Goner album, I'm really excited. I felt like my last album kind of wandered. I got a RAC grant for that. And I've got really conceptual with it and had to write down all of the like concept and statement of it. And I tried to follow that really, really like in accordance to what I had pitched to RAC. And I felt like it got a little convoluted and I got lost with it. And it's like the last year all of a sudden I'm like, oh no, I remember who I am and what this project is. And so I got to write probably like 5 albums worth of music over the last year, but I've been able to call it down and about 2/3 of the way through of recording a new album for that.
I know you mentioned that like you're not sure, like you don't have bandmates for the Said Goner music that you produce to tell you whether or not like it's good, it's bad. But I had to listen to the song that you have on your website for Said Goner. I really like that song. I think it was very, very, it resonated with me. I have like a my dad, he used to listen to like a lot of like soft rock. So I feel like out of all the music that you make, that the one that I really like the most, and I think it's really good. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah, so like that's the one band that I have that my mom's not like, oh, I don't know what you're saying, and like what, it's so loud. And like that's the band that I felt like was the opportunity for me, like me to reach beyond the scene of music I've been involved with literally since I'm a kid. I mean, I first time I screamed into a microphone, I was like probably 12 or 13. I was like, that's fun. That feels cool. Over the years, I'm like, I don't even listen to that music that much. So like, I should try to play more. So I appreciate you sharing that. That gives me a little bit more reason to continue.
Yeah. Do you make some of the album covers, or like, does your bands or the people in your bands ever come to you?
Yeah, actually, I do pretty much all of the artwork. Yeah, I'm like, sometimes when I don't think anything of this stuff, but then like I'll talk with someone about it, I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like I have to do everything. And it's funny because like my involvement with street art is like all about reaching out to communities and collaborate with people and stuff. Meanwhile, I'm like, I do the artwork on most of my albums, with most of my bands. All the Sed Goner artwork is my own. Actually, the last album that I did called Immutable Clarion, which was the album I mentioned, like I felt like it got a little convoluted just because I was lost in that album. The cover though I love, and I'm actually realizing I can't take credit for it. The cover is my dad took. He was a photographer. I mean, he still is a photographer. Not like he does it professionally or anything, but for a while he did. And I thought it was a really amazing photo that he had. And he gave it to me when I was a kid, and it stuck with me. But I did like all the layout and stuff with that. And then Carrie and Spring, almost every cover I did the artwork for, except for one, which was a trade. I had been recording a band and they didn't have money. And one of the members in that band were really good artists. And I was like, you know what? Instead of giving me money, why don't you just give me the artwork for one of my band's albums? But it's a different aesthetic from everything else that I've done with the band. And even my other band, Duracine, like I've done all the artwork with that. And I enjoy it, but yeah, it's a lot of work. And it's also weird to like not, you know, I think the beautiful thing about when art and music collide is the collaboration. The artist gets to like interpret what the musician does, and I kind of mess that process up by doing it myself.
Well, I guess for the final question, I'd like to ask if there is any advice that you would give to any upcoming artist or people who are interested in murals, music, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was younger, I like had people like, oh, cool, you're into art and you make art. That's great. And that was like about the amount of support I got. No one was ever like, hey, if you continue pouring yourself into this and spending a lot of time when you find that time, like, you know, if you work 9 to 5 or whatever, 5 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it is, if you're able to like free up even a few hours afterwards to like just make it a fun thing, to make it time that you get to spend with yourself. I wish I realized when I was younger, like that is the experience you gain to better understand yourself as an artist and to gain the experience so you can try to, I guess, quote, professionalize yourself in it. I think, you know, I feel like I shared this with the class when you were in Ayana. There's like Malcolm Gladwell has that like 10,000 hours devoted to anything can make you a master in it. And I think there might be some truth into that. I think there's always like opportunities out there. Like for instance, if you want to make murals, there's always going to be businesses that have blank walls, and you can eventually find a business that's like, you know what, like, that sounds cool. Like, you just came to me with an idea to get artwork on here. I'm down. I'll kick you a couple $100 for materials and go make it. Now, all of a sudden, you have one piece of artwork out in the world that's like everyone can see, and you might get more work from it that way. Same thing. I remember one time, I felt like I had an opportunity that completely got lost when I first moved here. And I went to an art gallery just to look. I had been told there was a good show there. And the gallery owner was like, "Hey, you look like you're an artist." And I was like, "Oh, I am." And she was like, "Can I see your portfolio?" And I had like no portfolio then. Yet I had a ton of artwork, but like no photographs of it or anything. And I was like, "Oh, I only have an image of this and this." And she was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And that was it. And if like I had organized myself, if I had taken decent pictures of everything I had, and I had thought about like what it would take to like make what we would say like a body of work so that they could see like 20 pieces like in the same kind of style, that could have potentially been like, "Hey, that's good. Let's maybe get you an opportunity to get you in this gallery." And so I think it's important to know like there's always opportunity out in the world for artists. How are you going to prepare yourself for it? And I think the preparation really comes down to that you know yourself, that you know your art enough that like you can make a bunch of it, you know? I think once you get to the point that you can say, "I like this 20 pieces of art," you can put that together as what we would say a portfolio and go out to places. And I think that's one of the hardest things is being ambitious enough, confident enough to say, and you don't even be confident, but just try to get yourself to like go, if it's a mural, go to businesses, go to buildings that have a blank wall and say, "Hey, I have artwork and I have the drive to get something up there." You're going to eventually find someone that wants it. Or just, you know, if you find yourself at a cafe or a restaurant that has artwork on there, just ask them like, "What does it take to see if I can get my artwork up on here?" People are always looking for new artists, you know? And then we have social media these days too. Back when I first started, there wasn't social media, but now it's like the world of hashtags, you know, and that kind of stuff. But I really think it's like, unfortunately, it's like having to carve out time to put in to your work. But think about it as like, it's you learning more about yourself. You know, I always think of it as like, I could be spending time with a friend, you know, going out to the bluffs and, you know, having a, you know, drinking seltzer water and talking about cool stuff, or going to, you know, a restaurant and getting food with someone or whatever. Or I could spend time myself and pretend that I am enjoying the time with myself, and I'm watching myself develop the way I could like learn more about another person if I'm being social with them. I think that's a really important aspect that I had understood when I was younger.
I guess last thing, anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of artwork of mine on my website, adambrockcirici.com, adambrockcirici.com. But I have a lot of murals up there, a lot of studio work up there. And I don't have much of a social media presence right now with the Street Ed program, but that's starting to take a fuller form. And I hope like within the next few months that I can have like a website that could share some of the experiences that are happening, especially which is coming up at Ethos Music School. And I encourage anyone that is listening to come and say hi to us. We'll be out there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, starting August 9th on through the end of the month. And it's going to be really exciting because it's not just like bringing out, you know, a bunch of younger artists, PPS students to make a mural. We're collaborating together. I'm going to be one of the artists working on the wall, Molly Mendoza, ideas from Ethos and the other communities that are going to be informing us of ideas for it. So, I would say rather than just like taking a chance to just go check out a website, like get out of your house and come see us and say hi would be really cool. Again, I believe that's August 9th that we start Monday, Wednesday, Friday throughout the rest of August.
And then social media handle?
Yeah, I think it's Adam Brock Cirici too. It's just, I made it easy enough. Yeah.
We're wrapping up, and I just want to let everybody know ways that they can find Art Talk Bus Stop on the internet. You can find us at arttalkbusstop.bandcamp.com. You can also stream us at kboo.fm. And you can find archives of the show on Bandcamp as well as on KBOO at kboo.fm/program/art-talk-bus-stop. And then I will also take a moment to plug something, which is that the cooperative printmaking studio that I'm a part of, which is called Flight 64, is having our first in-person show since the pandemic. And that is Thursday, August 26th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. And that's at Flight 64, which is at 2934 Northeast Alberta Street. So thanks for listening, everybody. And tune in each month from 11 to noon starting this month is our first 1 hour episode. But monthly, Art Talk Bus Stop airs now for an hour, 11 to 12, each fourth Wednesday of the month. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks for being our guest, Adam. It was great having you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a wonderful opportunity. Y'all rule.
Oh, thank you.
You never